What do we do when we're not sure what to do?
At last month's regional assembly, a gathering of UU congregations from across the Mid-America region, one of our worship services at the regional assembly was led by the Reverend Sharon Dittmar, the minister of the First Unitarian Church of Cincinnati. Sharon told us that when her ministry began 20 years ago, she was handed a toolkit, a set of instructions for what to do when specific situations arose. And then she took us to today. Today, when our ministers are instead instructed in systems theory and adaptive leadership. In ministry today, she said, there are no clear answers, no simple if-then analyses, no one way to handle things. It's all about being able to look at a system or a situation and having to figure it out while in the midst of it, what tools are needed and whether we have them. Sharon misses the old days. This worship service was in the context of a larger theme, that Unitarian Universalism is changing, especially as we observe and engage in the movements for racial equity that are sweeping our country. Throughout the conference, we were given opportunities to reflect on what Unitarian Universalists can do to make our congregations ready to welcome and to engage all people who seek us out, and what we need to be paying attention to. And we were given opportunities to reflect on our own readiness to engage in our multicultural, multiracial, and multi-theological world. The ministers' gathering that happened for 2 days before the full assembly focused on the same theme, and one of our worship services during that time was a praise service led by the Unitarian Universalist minister, Reverend Ian White Marr, the founder of a radical new kind of church called Original Blessing in Greenpoint, New York. This church has an outward-focused mission. It's intentionally countercultural, intentionally life-giving, a community in which people gather their spiritual strength during worship and fellowship for the purpose of building relationship and making change in the world. Sound familiar? We just don't do the praise music here. During the service, we sang together songs that Reverend Marr and a group of singers working with him taught to us, the congregation. There were no hymnals. And between songs, Reverend Marr preached the good news of Unitarian Universalism, that we are all loved deeply and completely, and that we are of worth in and of ourselves. He used a lot of God language. He called us God carriers. It is our job to carry God out into the world. And he led us in an affirmation that I have religion and I am not ashamed. Yeah. Very different. The most interesting thing for me happened after this service. We create right relationship teams at our ministerial gatherings. These teams who, if needed, help people navigate situations in which they've become uncomfortable. And during the debrief session, the morning after Reverend Marr's service, the right relationship team told us that several of the ministers had expressed deep discomfort with the style and the language of Reverend Marr's service. Breakout sessions had been planned for this morning, and so an impromptu session was created to make a space to have a conversation around this discomfort and this issue. Half the ministers there came to this session. We broke into small groups to talk about our own responses to the worship, which ranged from it was absolutely beautiful and I could connect to the feel of what was going on, to I couldn't connect to any of it. The language was a complete barrier. And then we processed in the whole group to figure out what to do with that. Where do we go from there? So it turned out, as I just said, that the responses to the service were across this full range. And so the conversation in the large group turned to the question of where the responsibility for our comfort lies. Is the worship leader responsible for explicitly inviting everyone in the room with this huge range of theologies and cultures into a place of resonance where we can all be together? Are the people in the pews or the chairs responsible for managing their own discomfort, given that huge range? How do we choose what to say, what to sit with, and whether to push back against the discomfort? Of course, we didn't resolve this question in this session, but it was very good to be able to have the conversation in a respectful, covenanted space, knowing that there was disagreement in the room. What do we do when we're not sure what to do? When I went to see the movie Selma, I was struck by the deliberate juxtaposition of the past with the present, especially in the song that played during the closing credits, the song we heard for our prelude. Today's direct actions planned by the Young, Gifted, and Black Coalition here in Madison and by other Black Lives Matters groups across the nation, those direct actions are deliberate responses to analyses of systemic racism, just as the direct actions planned by Martin Luther King Jr. and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and Malcolm X were. Today's organizing groups are grounded in those past groups and those past actions, basing their analyses and their tactics on how they understood analyses and tactics used 50 years ago. And here's the intersection. The new era, what's called the new era in Unitarian Universalism, is tied up with these movements. Just as UU's responded to Martin Luther King Jr.'s call to Selma 50 years ago. The Black Lives Matter movement is the call of our time, and if we're true to our history and our principles, we need to answer that call by standing in solidarity with people of color as they fight for their liberation. The most powerful thing I have done in a very long time happened this past Tuesday as I stood with other Madison clergy, with Tony Robinson's friends and family, when Ismail Ozan announced that no charges would be filed against Matt Kenney for shooting Tony. Powerful because what we were there for was to watch over the kids in the streets as clergy. That's the intersection. The world is multicultural, multiracial, multi-theological. If Unitarian Universalism is to be relevant in this world, if we are to be relevant in this community, and I'm not saying we're not, we have to also learn how to be in the spaces that make us uncomfortable. We can go with the changing demographics of our world, or we as a religion, as a faith tradition, can fade away. Going with it almost inevitably means that there will be times we are not sure what to do, right? If we're to move forward, diving into the understanding that we have to widen how we do things and how we see things, and diving into the understanding that part of why we're here is to stand with people who are oppressed, then there are going to be plenty of times we're not sure what to do. There are plenty of times I'm not sure what to do. On Tuesday afternoon, one of the things that happened after the decision was announced was that a press conference was held with Tony's family, and a group of Tony's friends and family were all gathered at Tony's house. And at one point, the emotion all spilled over. The street was not blocked off at the time. So the emotion spilled over. The kids streamed out of, and I say kids, you know, teenagers, kids in their 20s, probably 30s as well, streamed out, still a generation or two behind me. They are somebody's kids. Absolutely they are somebody's kids. Yes. They all streamed out into the street and they sat down. They just sat down. And I think without even looking at each other, you know, we weren't sure we would know what to do, I think, as clergy. We had just been gathered the week before to come to this. Without even looking at each other, we got up and walked out into the street and formed a line on either side of them and asked traffic to move the other way. And there was, you know, this is personal experience. There was something in wearing that stole and being able to hold the intersection between justice and faith for me in that moment. I was rehearsing with the choir this past Thursday when Rachel introduced the hymn that we sang just before the sermon to the choir. Nobody had sung it before, mostly like us, and it started kind of haltingly, mostly like us. After we made our way through it for one verse, Rachel explained why we were having a hard time. She said the hymn is challenging because it has what musicians call no time signature. So one measure might have more or fewer beats than the previous measure instead of what we're used to, da 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 da. It wasn't predictable, so it's hard to know what to expect as you move through the song. She said something like, you sort of have to look at each note as it comes and just look at how long each note is. And then let it come as it will, one note at a time. I thought to myself, Rachel, you just gave me the best metaphor for Sunday's sermon. Because Unitarian Universalism is a living tradition, one that changes and grows when new information or experiences stretch our understanding. So when things change or the way isn't clear, we have the capacity to take one note at a time and just let it come as it will. The sticking point in this is that it's hard. It's uncomfortable. How many of us enjoyed that hymn? One, two, right? But we did it anyway. It takes a certain kind of openness, a certain kind of trust that we have to practice again and again and again. It's openness, it's a willingness to be challenged, it's an ability to move with our faith, because it is a moving faith. And it's so important that we are not comfortable all the time, that we learn to sit with that discomfort, because it's about more than ourselves. One of the reasons we gather in religious community is to practice this. Practice it in love and in trust. UU congregations across the country are learning to do new things in response to changes in their communities and in our world. All Souls Unitarian Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, invited Bishop Carlton Pearson and his congregation, his African American fundamentalist congregation, to be part of their community when Reverend Pearson had a vision of universalism that resulted in him being called a heretic by a group of Pentecostal bishops. They still worship together. They have a traditional UU service, whatever that means, and they have a contemporary service with hand waving and call and response with UU theology in that service. The Sanctuary Boston is a new community of worship and seekers that helps young people find hope and love and belonging using what's called heart-centered and arts-centered worship to create spiritual connection. A lot more singing, a lot more activity, a lot more interaction. And Sacred Fire UU in Carrboro, North Carolina is an intentional community of young adult restaurant workers, activists, and musicians. That community builds itself through interdependence and solidarity work and was gathered by a UU minister in my graduating class and funded creatively through district churches, the UU funding program, and Faithify. And established congregations like us, established congregations are learning how to adapt, how to flow, how to welcome and engage people of all kinds. We're doing this at this intersection of sacred love and justice building, and we are doing that here as we share our stories, as we make connections, as we learn to sit with our discomfort, as we stand in solidarity with the causes we believe in, as we do that work. The way leads on, my friends, the way leads on. May we find it within ourselves to be open to where it leads. May it be so, and may we be so.